Welcome, friends, to the God Friend of Me podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Here 1 week and a day after the God Friend of Me series finale, bringing you our series wrap of the show Gone Before Its Time.
Pete, not a funeral today, an opportunity to reflect on some of the best loved parts of the show, reflect on the journey that those 42 episodes took us on, and be able to say goodbye to God Friend of Me. So where should we begin?
I mean, you have to start with the premise. You have to start with the feel-good nature, something that differentiates this show from almost everything on TV. Currently, calling into question its untimely cancellation.
It is a weird flip of fate that, you know, this show, presumably born under a certain framework of troubled times and whatnot, now bows out in just this massive, I mean, obviously pandemic, obviously coronavirus, but just this massive well of negative emotion that billions of us are in, even at our best, at our healthiest, just this sad state of affairs that the planet finds itself in, to lose this optimistic light, just comes with a little extra zing of hurt.
So much buzz about this show. I recall vividly watching it in August of 2018. They had put the pilot up early online. It was available for a brief amount of time. And a show that ultimately debuted over the air, following the NFL, of course, but still, to 10 million plus viewers, almost instantly connecting. And I want to say that Sunday was the fit for it. At the same time, the back and forth of where it would fall on a Sunday night after football made it confusing even for its core audience to know when it would be on.
Yeah, I think as a product that, you know, is going to fill a hole on CBS Sundays after football during the football season, it makes sense to say, hey, not only is this like the football audience in that it is diverse in age and race and gender and all that, and it has all these ways in which it can appeal to a football audience, but because of the nature of it, where it is half serial, half self-contained, all right, it is no big deal if that Dallas game goes into overtime and that upsets the ratings apple cart and you don't catch this week. Well, next week, it still is going to be a mission of the week. As a product, that all makes sense, but what does the net result end up being? That you do lose some of those twists and turns because the show was invested in having those character moments, whether it's a cancer development, a marriage development, a divorce development, whatever it was, that week-to-week story did grow week-to-week.
Yeah, the wrinkle that it put on the procedural drama, something CBS just loves and its core audience loves. But again, with that feel-good nature, mix it together with some current social media technology, and you had at least a modest hit. And you have to wonder, if we were not in the current pandemic that we're in, that maybe it's a different conversation towards the end of season two.
Yes, certainly a bunch of what ifs, even down to the way the finale unfolded. We obviously covered last week how portions of it were involving reused footage from the pilot. Other parts, it was edited as best it could be, that sort of thing. I don't know that the finale made or broke the ultimate fate of the show. I mean, ratings having ended up, certainly in the post-football scenario, ratings having ended up in an area that I guess did not work for a Warner Brothers television show on CBS. Flip side is, you know, if that finale was just magic, if it was one of these episodes where you say, oh my goodness, this is, it just captures something, it transcends the medium, that might have been the difference of, you know what, we'll throw you 13 more episodes, or we'll do this, or whatever it might be.
And you look back And obviously, this cast here, they're going to find work again. These creatives in Stephen Lillian and Brian Winbrandt, they're going to hook on, if not have something picked up on their slate there. But you can't help but wonder what was in the cards for this show in a long forum opportunity.
And it is interesting to think, too, about the nature of long form. I mean, if you said, in a different scenario, if you said, HBO Max announces this show, which was going to be headed to network, but now, you know, we're imagining some alternate reality here. It's going to be on HBO Max instead, and they're going to commit to 4 10-episode seasons right off the bat. Wow, 40 episodes. That would feel like so much. And for the premium streamers and premium cable outlets, I mean, 40 episodes is huge. However, through the lens of, you know, a good old network, hour-long drama, all right, 2 seasons, 42 episodes, longer than many, many shows, but paling in comparison to bunches and bunches of others. You know, again, it's, as I had said last week, I suspect that probably the fact that this was a show essentially of two corporate parents, a product of Warner Brothers Television, sold on CBS, that probably made the margin, not probably, that surely made the margins slimmer. And it's just a shame amidst all of this consolidation that's going on in Hollywood in terms of the corporate vertical structure. You know, again, if this show was a massive hit, if this was a Big Bang Theory or The Conners or something like that, they would have worked it out. But, you know, it's a show that existed, I can assume, financially on the ratings margins and on the financial margins, and kind of got the axe accordingly.
So let's look back here over these 2 seasons. Let's talk about the characters, let's talk about the storylines, and really delve into, Matt, what God in Front of Me was all about.
In the totality of these 42 episodes, I enjoy the arc that Miles went on, going from obviously not just the kind of religiously atheist perspective, but I think that he had that atheist perspective across his life, if one can kind of be unspiritual in their whole life, the way one could be spiritual just in a house of worship or spiritual kind of across the board, for him to take this, one can assume that when the series started, he was just kind of equally detached from larger purpose or things of that sort, and to have him pick up this mantle as the prophet of sorts for the God account, slowly buy into that, still try and explain it away through technological or man-made means, and waver in and out, and then still try and consolidate things as an atheist. Then at the very end, there's that glimmer of more. I think that's a very, very satisfying journey, if perhaps not the shape of the arc that they would have hoped for with future seasons.
And boy, Brandon Michael Hall was perfectly cast as Miles. I mean, you had me with the premise, this idea, a God account is suggesting friends to people. But then you really pull me in. The guy's a podcaster.
Certainly the notion of Lillian and Winbrandt doing a show about a podcaster, guys whose last show, Alcatraz, led us to interview them on our Alcatraz podcast at the time, that always gave us a little smile. You know, of course, almost certainly there's no connection between the two, but Pete, didn't this show teach us that there's connections that you didn't know about?
Like Violet Bean playing Cara Bloom, a journalist?
There's that too.
So basically, Matt, I am the impetus of the two leads on the show, right, Rakesh?
Hold on, I have a technological solution for that after this act break. The joy in this show, I think, had been in the cast members, in the way the characters interacted. I do wonder at what point the show maybe kind of looked at itself, or to be more specific, maybe in the writer's room, they kind of said, well, we've done Miles and Kara, they won't. We've done Miles and Kara, they will. We've done Miles and Kara, they've broken up. Like, what's next? Perhaps to a certain degree, they said, now let's go to Rakesh. Rakesh and Jaya will. No, they won't. Wait, maybe they will. You know, what's next? But I think that these were very pure and very authentic characters that they created. I think of some of the other stuff on TV where, you know, is District Attorney Smith from this show really that different from Prosecutor Jones in the other show? You know, you could not say that about Miles, Kara, Rakesh, Reverend Finer, you know, Allie, and so forth.
I don't know that Kara ever really hit her stride as a character. I mean, the secondary protagonist, is it fair necessarily for the expectation that they would? I don't know. You mentioned 42 episodes. It is a fair amount of time. Basically, her storyline, you know, I'm going to report along with these adventures. She falls in love with Miles, obviously takes two to tango. We separate them. She's going to do this book. That went away. And then I felt like much of the second season with her was tied to Miles and even kind of, you know, driftless.
I think some of that drift when she was tied to Adam, I think that if we put it up on the old writer's room whiteboard, you know, things Miles has done, you know, bits of business, whether it's his podcasting, whether it's working at Identity Sealed and not, I think that if we had lists, we'd say, oh, look, Kara's list does compare with the others. But for as much as I'd like to gently wag my finger at the show using Rakesh as, he's magic computer guy who can do magic computer things, at least he was getting these scenes of like, oh man, the packet kernel overflow. We're going to have to do a hack around. I don't know what that means, but it was pretty cool. Oh, quick, get the blue thumb drive. Oh, we're going to have to Wi-Fi switch. And then he saves the day. And, you know, and I think we had versions of that with the other characters, whether it was Reverend Finer with Trish and his, you know, his attempts to woo her and whatnot. My point being, I think with Kara, we spent less time saying, oh my goodness, what a, you know, will you find the investigative journalist angle? And instead it would be, hello, talk to Miles. I'm reporter. Oh, I have to go over there because book. Oh, I have to go over there because Adam, in a way that maybe wasn't as organically fueled as, oh man, Rakesh really loves to hack an N3 encryption system.
Somebody I could see catching on very quickly. It's a shame that pilot season, much like all of Hollywood right now, is really in disarray. But Serge Sharma, just a wonderful presence that I think is going to find steady work because of his work on this show.
Perhaps with all this craziness, you know, sure, let me put it this way. Perhaps he will land back quickly just because there are pilots unmade and many shows for the potential fall 2020 season have been provisionally picked up straight to series and so forth. But that doesn't mean everything's ready to go. And you might all of a sudden look around and go, oh man, we need a new lead, or we need a new best friend, or we need a new lead's boss, or whatever it is. We need a new protagonist. And, oh, he's available now, whereas, you know, he wasn't when you were putting casts together at the end of April to begin filming at the end of March, or, you know, pardon me, the end of February, beginning of March, and everything, you know, hit the fan there. So maybe in this chaos, maybe in a God friended me moment from the low, we will get the push for Serge Sharma.
With Reverend Finer, with Joe Morton, this rock solid presence that you had, clearly always in the background, but just such a week to week rock to be able to build the show around.
I think of my brother-in-law running into Joe Morton on the train in what must have been around the time that they were filming the pilot of this. I don't know if Joe Morton is East Coast based or West Coast based, in general. But I think of that bit of serendipity. I think of, you know, any Joe Morton project, people like Joe Morton in it. And I think of how convinced I was on a small level that at the end of season one, they were just going to get rid of Reverend Finer because they had run out of things for him to do. And for him to come roaring back in season two, not just with kind of, you know, ascending as the Bishop of New York, but also finding love, finding that next chapter of his life and so forth. It was just a really fulfilling journey for him as well.
We talked a lot in the first season about Javicia Leslie, the least seen member of the cast. Boy, could they give Ali more to do. And our prayers were answered, Matt. The storyline, not necessarily the one we would be rooting for, but definitely gave her the featured role.
Yeah, as always, I like to qualify the commentary for Ali and saying, you know, Ali being fake, it's no harm, no foul to give Ali fake cancer. Or I guess it was real to Ali. You know what I'm saying? That we give these characters twists and turns to have them be interesting for the audience and to give interesting performance from the actors. Great turn then for Ali there as a character. And Pete, you know, you said our prayers answered. I won't assume that on this Lillian and Winbrandt show, we have people from the series listening to the podcast, but boy, that was something that it became difficult week after week to say things about Ali beyond Ali sure poured a great drink. Ali sure cleaned that bar well. Ali sure said, so Rakesh, tell me about your storyline. Oh, no, now you have to go. Goodbye. And for them just to give her, to give Javicia Leslie this great stuff to act about, to give her her own romantic arc there, for her to be more out in terms of her romantic feelings, for her to be, you know, going through this journey across all the emotional levels that she did. It was such a wonderful addition to the show.
And then Erica Gimple really balanced out the cast in this second season here as a regular. Loved her when we got her in season one, bringing Reverend Finer along, meeting this woman after the loss of his wife, and to bring another female presence. I think she was, you know, in there about as much as we could hope. It was an interesting wrinkle, particularly the way that the show ended up with her holding the cards there, as it were, with the power of attorney, something that perhaps might have been a setup for future storytelling.
Yeah, I think she was a great supporting character. I suppose I hadn't thought about it in terms of gender, but it was an opportunity to add another female voice there. And you kind of end up with your core being three guys and three gals. And I think they used her the right amount. Certainly there were episodes she did not appear in. Sometimes that was a function of the story, i.e. the marriage is off, I'm going to the house in upstate New York, or downstate New York, or wherever it was. Other times it was just, she's not in this story this week. She will be referred to, or she won't be referred to. But really a great addition, and I think probably in our memories appeared in a larger portion of the show than perhaps was factually accurate, just because her presence was such.
So baked into this premise, the friend suggestions. So Matt, your favorite friend suggestion?
Pete, Ray Nicolette, one of the early friend suggestions, perhaps the most returned friend suggestion. Just something about the guy and his sympathetic story, his kind of, I don't know, his easygoing. It wasn't full on, hey, New York, but he would just be like, Miles, I don't know what to tell you. Hey, let's go get a meatball sub. Like, there was just something great about the character, and it was great to see him return time after time.
Teasing the foster child that he had taken into his life there after his wife's death, about the Jets. It doesn't get any more New York than that. I almost went there, Matt. I had an inkling you were going to pick him. So, you know, third episode there, first season, Heavenly Taco Truck, giving us Ray Nicolette. I think an easy pick, though. I'm going to go with Fliss. I'm going to go the character who popped up in the very next episode, Error Code 1.61. You know, the Fibonacci episode. Begin to peel that up a little bit. And this really hopeful, upbeat character of Fliss.
She was a great presence as well, particularly as somebody who is a little bit more kind of a little bit more out there. It does also remind me tangentially that when that episode aired, our concern was that it would feature an appearance, since they were at the Hayden Planetarium, that it would feature an appearance of the director of the Hayden Planetarium, who at the time had been accused of being inappropriate, etc. I believe Dr. deGrasse Tyson since cleared there, so no harm, no foul, I suppose. But you just took me back to that moment of saying, "Oh no, is this sweet show gonna have somebody in it who we wouldn't approve of?" I guess the closest we came to that was more of the friendly confines there of Yankee Stadium and when CC Sabathia showed up. But other than that, I'd say all good guest stars and friend suggestions.
So, how about your least favorite,
Pete? I never disliked any of the protagonists, antagonists, side characters, hot dog vendors, etc. in this show, except for Trevor, who, Pete, I am a white dude in the middle of my life. Trevor is. You'd think I'd see myself. Pete, he made me look in the mirror and say, are there times that I am ever a doodle bag? Are there times I ever am an entitled jerk? If the show has given me one negative turned positive, God friended me uplift, it has been with myself. I have the shorthand code to say, as I look in the mirror, don't be a Trevor today.
God, he was bad, wasn't he? I'm going to change my own question up a little bit, given that you picked, I think, the easy target. I'm going to thank God we never got old Adam as a friend suggestion, because he was the worst.
I don't think the actor can act very well. And I think that's why I dislike him.
Hang on. I am looking over to the side here. Hey, Kara, I don't think we can be together because Miles.
But you need to say it as though you are commenting about there's a pickle in my salami sandwich. So, like, you think of the emotion where you just kind of be slightly annoyed. There's a pickle in my salami sandwich. Then you say, I don't think we could do this, Kara, because of Miles. I don't want to overly throw rocks at the actor. He's very tall and very muscular and very handsome. And he's a working actor, so life isn't that bad for him. But I guess here's what I'm trying to say, Pete. I disliked Trevor on his character demerits. I might dislike Adam on the actor's merits/demerits, and that's maybe a little unfair. Pete, that would not be very God-friended of me to delve too deep on that. But I will agree that we, the audience, were not meant to like Adam very much.
With everything that happened and the way that the show had ended, you have to wonder, too, what the plan would have been ultimately with Joy just dropped off the face of the show.
I thought that we were getting a new recurring cast member, and recur she did in a sense, in that she was in a number of the first episodes and then came back, I think, once and then got referenced again. But in retrospect, the same amount of both screen time and story importance that Erica Gimple received, I would have thought that Joy would have had that as well, sliding in and out. Maybe sometimes she would have been the, oh, I will go ask someone off screen. Okay, I have come back, or whatever it might be. I kind of feel like it was an opportunity that was missed.
Well, Matt, with the show having ended here, and there are a couple of petitions out there. There's some people that, you know, want to do what they can to try to salvage the show. I don't know how realistic that can be, especially with the conditions here because of the coronavirus. Again, you're passionate about something, speak out, try to make it happen. I'd seen some destructive types of things going on. People, they're going to boycott the 8 o'clock movie, Matt, on Sunday night, because that'll get old CBS right in the ratings, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, that they've licensed inexpensively from their movie wing, which is why they're doing it. I know this. I know that, unfortunately, God Friended Me is on a very short list of shows that CBS canceled this season, and the other ones, maybe three or four other ones, I don't have the list in front of me, but all the other ones ran their course in a way that God Friended Me did not. For example, hey, 10 seasons of Hawaii Five-O, okay, running a little long in the tooth and getting expensive or whatever, whatever, given plenty of warning to write the finale, you know, like months and months warning. CBS gave only one, has only given one surprise cancellation in terms of how I read the tea leaves and whatnot for all of its shows this season, and it was God Friended Me. Now, a whole bunch of other shows might get the axe if in 2 weeks California says, the vaccine is here, everything's back to normal, it's 100% back to normal, it's phase four. And other shows might be equally sideswiped, but whatever the metrics were, I'm assuming, again, the combination of ratings, the combination of, you know, separate corporate entities behind the creation and the distribution of the show, whatever it is, this is the only show that got canceled like this on CBS. It might even have only been the only show in 2020 that CBS has canceled. It's difficult to remember, you know, January and February and the first half of March, but the odds are super, super, super long. As you say, Pete, if you're passionate, let your voice be heard. I just don't know where that voice is going to go when every production is has a question mark next to it right now.
Yeah, and as much as you think that maybe there's some movement there, they haven't broken down the sets. It wasn't safe to. It hasn't been safe to just yet. You got to wonder how much time there might be to save the show.
Well, Pete, I guess that means that we can hold out hope for that set visit until we see, oh man, Joe the Carpenter's in there taking down walls. You know, hope can remain. Pete, let's look a little farther down the line, though. Perhaps this is the end of the line of the show. Where do you see Stephen Lillian and Brian Winbrandt, that irascible writing pair, creation duo, where do they land next? Is it a brand new show that they pitch? Do they do as they did post Alcatraz and join the writing and producing staff of other shows? They have kind of that procedural background. They did some CSI in New York. They have kind of the geek cred thing. They did Gotham for a while. What's next for them?
I want them to get that work. I want them to get that shot to pitch something of their own. I mean, you got to pay the bills and you got to stay afloat, and, you know, being able to jump around to those different shows after, you know, the dream shot with Alcatraz and what that did for them. Pitching to J.J. Abrams, who told them, you know, he'd feel stupid if somebody else was making this show and it wasn't him. They get this second shot at a show. They get two seasons out of it. Okay. I mean, I would suspect they hook on with a pre-existing production if God Friended Me isn't somehow resurrected. Give themselves some time to pitch another pilot, and you know, you figure a year, two, maybe we're back on another Lillian Winbrandt show.
Certainly, fingers crossed there. Pete, I would predict whatever it is that they end up creating next, it's going to have that mix of procedural, it's going to have that mix with a serial storyline. It's going to take elements that are both familiar to us, to them. It's going to take brand new thoughts, because you gotta break out there in the marketplace, and can't wait to see what they have next. As for Fantastic Geek, I know what we have next. Listeners to the Pop Culture Podcast feed know that only yesterday we were talking some of the future for the Marvel Studios shows on Disney Plus. We're going to be checking in with our Mandalorian feed in the coming days, and you know, lots of question marks, of course, all across Hollywood. When will Mandalorian come out? Star Trek Discovery Season 3. Certainly, Pete, in the interim, there's always classic episodes, great episodes across the pantheon of Star Trek to fill our schedule. So luckily, whatever the Hollywood shutdown is, Fantastic Geek can keep going week after week with at least one episode. And I know, Pete, later this month, what that's going to be. It's also going to be our mothership, the Fantastic Geek Bedrock Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which for sure, coronavirus did not get that because they somehow wisely used their time machine into the future to go to the past to make this season last season. Got that coming at the end of this month as well.
Yes, the seventh season beginning on Wednesday, May 27th, we'll be bringing you that. We're running up to that with a couple of different promotions. One, we're doing Netflix parties each of the Saturdays in between there, 10 p.m. Eastern. You check our Facebook page and our Twitter, be able to participate with us on that. We've done an episode from the first two seasons. We'll be doing episode three this Saturday, May 9th. And then we've got a review raffle going on across all of our podcast feeds. We're giving away a Star Wars Rise of Skywalker digital download code. You get yourself into that raffle with any review left to any of our 19, soon to be 20 podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts.
Yes, working on a new nimble feed, but more on that at a later time. And certainly all of this made possible by the people who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek. Every episode of God Friend and Me is going to remain up there, at least every podcast episode is going to remain up there for you to go back to listen to. All our back episodes of all our properties staying up there and all the future endeavors made possible by those patrons.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content, all sorts of levels to choose from. You can create your own, but it takes just a dollar to get you in that door per month, and that goes a real long way. Like you said, the back catalog, everything that we do here, can't contribute just this month, and especially in these trying economic times, we understand. That's where helping us out on Apple Podcasts becomes key and without fee.
Pete, all sorts of goodies there on the Patreon. There's one, though, that's always a freebie that's talking to you on Twitter. How can people do so?
Find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 11,321 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek, all one word, with the P and the H, like it today.
Who will our next Facebook friend suggestion be? Well, Pete, I know this now draws to a close our God Friend of Me podcast, almost surely, although you never know. Stay subscribed. There could be a miracle, but now the time has come for me to say adios to all our listeners and to give you, Pete, the final God Friend of Me word.
Good day.